Chapter 3. Back at my desk.
Funding for the Special Operations Network comes directly from the government. Most work is centralized, but all of the Special Ops divisions have local representatives to keep a watchful eye on any provincial problems. They are administered by local commanders who liaise with the national offices for information exchange, guidance, and policy decisions. Like any other big government department, it looks good on paper, but is an utter shambles. Petty infighting and political agendas, arrogance and sheer bloody-mindedness almost guarantees that the left hand doesn't know what the right is doing.
Melinda Floss, A Short History of the Special Operations Network. 2 days of fruitless hunting for Chuzzlewit had passed without even the slightest clue as to where it might be. There had been whispers of reprimands, but only if we could figure out how the manuscript was taken. It would seem a bit ludicrous to be chastised for leaving a loophole in the security arrangements, but not know what it was. Now, slightly despondent, I was sitting at my desk back at the station. Recalling my conversation with Dad, I phoned my mother to ask her not to paint the bedroom mauve. The call backfired slightly, as she thought this was a grand idea and hung up before I could argue. I sighed and flipped through the telephone messages that had accumulated over the past 2 days. They were mostly from informers and concerned citizens who had been robbed or cheated and wanted to know if we had made any headway. It was all small beer compared to Chuzzlewit. There were a lot of gullible people out there buying first editions of Byronic verse at knockdown prices, then complaining bitterly when they found out they were fakes. Like most of the other operatives, I had a pretty good idea who was behind all of this, but we never caught the big fish. Just the utterers, the dealers who sold it all on. It smacked of corruption in high places, but we never had any proof. Usually I read my messages with interest, but today none of it seemed terribly important. After all, the verses of Byron, Keats, or Poe are real whether they're in bootleg form or not. You can still read them for the same effect. I opened the drawer of my desk and pulled out a small mirror. A woman with somewhat ordinary features stared back at me. Her hair was a plain mousy colour and of medium length, tied up rather hastily in a ponytail at the back. She had no cheekbones to speak of, and her face, I noticed, had just started to show some rather obvious lines. I thought of my mother, who had looked as wrinkled as a walnut by the time she was 45. I shuddered, placed the mirror back in the drawer, and took out a faded and slightly dog-eared photograph. It was a photo of myself with a group of friends taken in the Crimea, when I had been simply Corporal T.E. Next, 3355-0336, Driver, APC, Light Armoured Brigade. I had served my country diligently, been involved in a military disaster, and then honourably discharged with a gong to prove it. They had expected me to give talks about recruitment and valour, but I had disappointed them. I attended one regimental reunion, but that was it. I had found myself looking for the faces that I knew weren't there. In the photo, Landon was standing on my left, his arm around me and another soldier, my brother, his best mate. Landon lost a leg, but he came home. My brother was still out there.
"Who's that?" asked Paige, who had been looking over my shoulder.
"Whoa!" I yelped. "You just scared the crap out of me."
"Sorry. Crimea?"
I handed her the photo, and she looked at it intently.
"That must be your brother. You have the same nose."
"I know. We used to share it on a rota. I had it Mondays, Wednesday."
"Then the other man must be Landon."
I frowned and turned to face her. I never mentioned Landon to anyone. It was personal. I felt kind of betrayed that she might have been prying behind my back.
"How do you know about Landon?"
She sensed the anger in my voice, smiled,
and raised an eyebrow.
You told me about him.
I did.
Sure.
The speech was slurred, and for the most part it was garbage, but he was certainly on your mind.
I winced. Last year's Christmas bash.
Or the year before. You weren't the only one talking garbage with a slurred speech.
I looked at the photo again.
We were engaged.
Paige suddenly looked uneasy. Crimean fiancés could be seriously bad conversation topics.
Did he, come back?
Most of him. He left a leg behind. We don't speak too much these days.
What's his full name? Asked Paige, interested in finally getting something out of my past.
Is Park Lane.
Landon Park Lane.
It was the first time I had said his name out loud for almost longer than I could remember.
Park Lane, the writer?
I nodded.
Good-looking bloke.
Thank you, I replied, not quite knowing what I was thanking her for. I put the photograph back in my drawer, and Paige clicked her fingers.
Boswell wants to see you,
she announced, finally remembering what she had come over to say. Boswell was not alone. A man in his 40s was waiting for me and rose as I entered. He didn't blink very much and had a large scar down one side of his face. Boswell hummed and hawed for a moment, coughed, looked at his watch, and then said something about leaving us to it.
Police,
I asked as soon as we were alone.
Has a relative died or something?
The man closed the Venetian blinds to give us more privacy.
Not that I heard about.
SO1, I asked, expecting a possible reprimand.
Me?
Replied the man with genuine surprise.
No.
Literatech?
Why don't you sit down?
He offered me a seat and then sat down in Boswell's large oak swivel chair. He had a buff file with my name on the cover, which he flopped on the desk in front of him. I was amazed by how thick the file was.
Is that all about me?
He ignored me. Instead of opening my file, he leaned forward and gazed at me with his unblinking eyes.
How do you rate the Chuzzlewit case?
I found myself staring at his scar. It ran from his forehead down to his chin and had all the size and subtlety of a shipbuilder's weld. It pulled his lip up, but apart from that, his face was pleasant enough. Without the scar, he might have been handsome. I was being unsubtle. He instinctively brought up a hand to cover it.
Finest Cossack,
he murmured, making light of it. I'm sorry.
Don't be. It's hard not to gawp.
He paused for a moment.
I work for Special Ops 5,
he announced slowly, showing me a shiny badge.
SO5,
I gasped, failing to hide the surprise in my voice.
What do you lot do?
That's restricted, Miss Next. I showed you the badge so you could talk to me without worrying about security clearances. I can okay that with Boswell if you'd prefer.
My heart was beating faster. Interviews with Special Ops operatives farther up the ladder sometimes led to transfers.
So, Miss Next, what do you think about Chuzzlewit?
You want my opinion or the official version?
Your opinion. Official versions I get from Boswell.
I think it's too early to tell. If ransom is the motive, then we can assume the manuscript is still in one piece. If it's stolen to sell or barter, we can also consider it in one piece. If terrorism is the game, then we might have to be worried. In scenarios 1 and 3, the literatechs have sod all to do with it. SO9 get involved and we're kind of out of the picture. The man looked at me intently and nodded his head.
You don't like it here, do you?
I've had enough,
put it that way, I responded, slightly less guardedly than I should. Who are you, anyway?
The man laughed. Sorry, very bad manners. I didn't mean all the cloak and dagger stuff. The name's Tamworth, head field operative at SO5. Actually, he added, that doesn't mean so much. At present, there are just me and two others.
I shook his outstretched hand. Three people in a special ops division? I asked curiously. Isn't that kind of mean?
I lost some guys yesterday.
I'm sorry.
Not that way. We just made a bit of headway, and that's not always good news. Some people research well in SO5, but don't like the field work. They have kids. I don't. But I understand.
I nodded. I understood, too. Why are you talking to me? I asked almost casually. I'm SO27.
As the Special Ops Transfer Board so kindly keeps telling me, my talents lie either in front of a Literatech desk or a kitchen stove.
Tamworth smiled. He patted the file in front of him.
I know all about that. Special Ops Central Recruiting don't really have a good word for no. They just fob. It's what they're best at. On the contrary, they are fully aware of your potential. I spoke to Boswell just now, and he thinks he can just about let you go if you want to help us over at SO5.
If you're SO5, he doesn't have much choice, does he?
Tamworth laughed. That's true, but you do. I'd never recruit anyone who didn't want to join me.
I looked at him. He meant it. Is this a transfer?
No, replied Tamworth. It isn't. I just need you because you have information that is of use to us. You'll be an observer, nothing more. Once you understand what we're up against, you'll be very glad to be just that.
So when this is over, I just get thrown back here. He paused and looked at me for a moment, trying to give the best assurance that he could without lying. I liked him for it.
I make no guarantees, Miss Next. But anyone who has been on an SO5 assignment can be pretty confident that they won't be SO27 forever.
What is it you want me to do? Tamworth pulled a form from his case and pushed it across the table to me. It was a standard security clearance and, once signed, gave Special Ops the right to almost anything I possessed, and a lot more besides, if I so much as breathed a word to someone with a lesser clearance. I signed it dutifully and handed it back. In exchange, he gave me a shiny SO5 badge with my name already in place. Tamworth knew me better than I thought. This done, he lowered his voice and began.
SO5 is basically a search and containment facility. We are posted with a man to track until found and contained. Then we get another. SO4 is pretty much the same. They are just after a different thing. Person. You know. Anyway, I was down at Gad's Hill this morning, Thursday. Can I call you Thursday? And I had a good look at the crime scene at first hand. Whoever took the manuscript of Chuzzlewit left no fingerprints, no sign of entry, and nothing on any of the cameras.
Not a lot to go on, was there?
On the contrary, it was just the break I've been waiting for.
Did you share this with Boswell? I asked.
Of course not. We're not interested in the manuscript. We're interested in the man who stole it.
And who's that?
I can't tell you his name, but I can write it.
He took out a felt tip and wrote Acheron Hades on a notepad and held it up for me to read.
Look familiar?
Very familiar. There can't be many people who haven't heard about him.
I know, but you've met him, haven't you?
Certainly, I replied. He was one of the lecturers when I studied English at Swindon in 68.
None of us were surprised when he switched to a career of crime. He was something of a lech. He made one of the students pregnant.
Brayburn. Yes, we know about her.
What about you? He never made me pregnant, but he had a good try.
Did you sleep with him?
No. I didn't figure sleeping with lecturers was really where I wanted to be. The attention was flattering, I suppose. Dinner and stuff. He was brilliant, but a moral vacuum. I remember once he was arrested for armed robbery while giving a spirited lecture on John Webster's The White Devil. He was released without charge on that occasion, but the Brayburn thing was enough to have him dismissed.
He asked you to go with him, yet you turned him down.
Your information is good, Mr. Tamworth. Tamworth scribbled a note on his pad. He looked up at me again.
But the important thing is, you know what he looks like.
Of course, I replied. But you're wasting your time. He died in Venezuela in 82.
No. He just made us think he had. We exhumed the grave the following year. It wasn't him at all. He feigned death so well that he fooled the doctors. They buried a weighted coffin. He has powers that are slightly baffling. That's why we can't say his name. I call it Rule Number One.
His name? Why not?
Because he can hear his own name, even whispered, over a 1,000-yard radius, perhaps more. He uses it to sense our presence.
And why do you suppose he stole Chuzzlewit? Tamworth reached into his case and pulled out a file. It was marked Most Secret, Spec Ops 5, Clearance Only. The slot in the front, usually reserved for a mugshot, was empty.
We don't have a picture of him, said Tamworth as I opened the file. He doesn't resolve on film or video, and has never been in custody long enough to be sketched. Remember the cameras at Gad's Hill?
Yes.
They didn't pick anyone up. I went through the tapes very carefully.
The camera angle changed every 5 seconds, yet there would be no way anyone could dodge all of them during the time they were in the building.
Do you see what I mean?
I nodded slowly and flicked through the pages of Acheron's file. Tamworth continued.
I've been after him for 5 years. He has 7 outstanding warrants for murder in England, 18 in America. Extortion, theft, and kidnapping. He's cold, calculating, and quite ruthless. 36 of his 42 known victims were either spec ops or police officers.
Hartlepool in 75? I asked.
Yes, replied Tamworth slowly. You heard about it?
I had. Most people had. Hades had been cornered in the basement of a multi-story car park after a botched robbery. One of his associates lay dead in a bank nearby. Acheron had killed the wounded man to stop him talking. In the basement, he persuaded an officer into giving him his gun, killing 6 others as he walked out. The only officer who survived was the one whose gun he had used. That was Acheron's idea of a joke. The officer in question never gave a satisfactory explanation as to why he had given up his firearm. He had taken early retirement and gassed himself in his car 6 years later after a short history of alcoholism and petty theft. He came to be known as the 7th victim.
I interviewed the Hartlepool survivor before he took his own life, Tamworth went on. After I was instructed to find him at any cost. My findings led us to formulate Rule Number 2. If you ever have the misfortune to face him in person, believe nothing that he says or does. He can lie in thought, deed, action, and appearance. He has amazing persuasive powers over those of weak mind. Did I tell you that we have been authorized to use maximum force?
No, but I guessed.
SO5 has a shoot-to-kill policy concerning our friend.
Whoa, wait a sec. You have the power to eliminate without trial.
Welcome to Spec Ops 5, Thursday. What did you think containment meant?
He laughed a laugh that was slightly disturbing.
As the saying goes, if you want to get into Spec Ops, act kinda weird. We don't tend to pussyfoot around.
Is it legal?
Not in the least. It's Blind Eye Grand Central below Spec Ops 8. We have a saying, below the 8, above the law. Ever hear it?
No.
You'll hear it a lot. In any event, we make it our rule number 3. Apprehension is of minimal importance. What gun do you carry?
I told him, and he scribbled a note.
I'll get some fluted expansion slugs for you.
They'll be hell to pay if we get caught with those.
Self-defense only, explained Tamworth quickly. You won't be dealing with this man. I just want you to ID him if he shows. But listen, if the shit hits the fan, I don't want any of my people left with bows and arrows against the lightning. And anything less than an expanding slug is about as good as using wet cardboard as a flat jacket. We know almost nothing about him. No birth certificate, not even a reliable age, or even who his parents were. He just appeared on the scene in 54 as a petty criminal with a literary edge, and has worked his way steadily upward to being number 3 on the planet's most wanted list.
Who are number 1 and 2?
I don't know, and I have been reliably informed that it's far better not to know.
So, where do we go from here?
I'll call you. Stay alert, and keep your pager with you at all times. You're on leave as of now from SO27, so just enjoy the time off. I'll be seeing you.
He was gone in an instant, leaving me with the SO5 badge and a thumping heart. Boswell returned, followed by a curious page. I showed them both the badge.
Way to go, said Paige, giving me a hug. But Boswell seemed less happy.
After all, he did have his own department to think about.
They can play very rough at SO5 next, said Boswell in a fatherly tone. I want you to go back to your desk and have a long, calm think about this. Have a cup of coffee and a bun. No, have 2 buns. Don't make any rash decisions, and just run through all the pros and cons of the argument. When you've done that, I would be happy to adjudicate. Do you understand?
I understood. In my hurry to leave the office, I almost forgot the picture of Landon.